Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda Ellsworth, and we have a great show in store for you today. I have Dr. Lynette Louise, is an internationally renowned brain change and leadership expert who teaches a unique and effective approach to leadership around the globe. An award-winning author, speaker, opinion writer, host, recognized humanitarian, and consultant, Lynette, known as the Brain Broad, is universally applauded for her skilled use of science and stories when speaking to and teaching groups. Lynette leverages her understanding of how to harness the brain's plasticity, lending leaders in all areas of business a leg up in their industry. Dr. Lynette has a doctorate in bioscience and held 2 board certifications in neurofeedback. It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Lynette Louise to our show today.
Hi. Well, thank you for having me. I always appreciate a shared audience.
Well, thanks so much. So let's just dive right in here and let's fill in some of the gaps from this bio and let our audience get to know a little bit more about you and more importantly about your journey and how you got where you are today.
Well, my journey's pretty circuitous, but I started out being born, you know, the usual path. I came from an abusive background. My family was quite bipolar in their approach to life. So my mom was a teacher and everything was beautiful on the outside, but on the inside of the house, it was pretty abusive and scary. So I was raised through that with a commitment to make the world a different place. I don't remember a time when I didn't think, boy, when I have power, I'm going to make this a nicer place to live. And I, in that process, wanted to adopt a million children and, you know, just really stamp the world with change, but change for the better. And of course, I thought the whole world was the world I lived in, right? And as I grew up, I realized there were lots of nice people, which was a relief. But when I adopted all those children, so I had 8 children, and I adopted 6 of them, and 4 were multiply handicapped. 5 were challenged, but 4 were multiply handicapped and on the spectrum of autism with fetal alcohol syndrome and Tourette's and retardation, which is a dirty word now, but was a medical diagnosis at the time. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was a big job, and I had to figure out how to do that job. And I'd left school in grade 9, so I had no education, and I was really fumbling around trying to find out how to help them. And in the process, realized that I had Asperger's myself. And we journeyed the journey together between educating myself with all of the therapies that exist and deciding what worked and what didn't, and sort of walking just a few steps ahead of my kids. I was always in touch with their challenges because I had many of them myself. And that led me to realize that, you know, we can really accomplish anything within the limits of what we began with brain-wise. And it made me a brain expert. It made me, you know, I just kept following and learning and following and learning. And then one day I went, well, I guess I need a doctorate or no one will listen to me because I really know a lot now. So that's my journey. And if you can find any spot in there you want to ask questions, you're welcome to.
Wow. That was a lot, right?
Yeah. Yes. And not only that, but of course, people saw the changes in the kids. And I fought the system at every turn because most of what you're told about this is wrong, or especially back then, they were very uninformed. And, you know, so then people saw my children getting better and asked me to help them. And I was very hands on. So when I say that I understand brain plasticity, I mean it from my own brain, my children's brains, and all the people in the world that I work with. I work internationally. So it's a huge journey, and I hope I can share some, you know, some light for people, give them some information that makes their life better.
Well, I know just from some friends that I have of my own, there definitely are more probably programs and opportunities and a lot greater understanding of some of these things, but how to access them and go through all the red tape and make sure that you're doing the right things, I think that that's as hard as it's ever been. And in some cases, probably harder.
Yeah, in some cases harder because for lots of reasons, but one of the reasons being that myths have been propagated about many of the disabilities that are attached to the diagnosis. And we use the verbiage plasticity of the brain. Everybody's heard of that. But then we also say, well, you can't have that because that child has this diagnosis. And these two things don't go together. You know, either the brain is plastic and continue to grow in shape and does continue to grow in shape dependent upon what you're doing and the things that you're hearing and the information you're putting in the brain, or it doesn't. Make up your mind, right? Mm-hmm. So we're an incongruent society that says one thing with one hand and another thing with another. And it does make it much more confusing for parents and confusing for therapists as to, you know, what are the limits here? What can I do? There's more people that'll take exception to you being different. In the past, nobody even knew what many of these things were, especially autism. And so if you sounded confident, they let you go. They know, okay, you sound like you know what you're doing. Go for it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how's the business shaped your lifestyle today?
You know, what really happened was I started out very focused in autism and people that had dealt with abuse. I mean, it's clearly understandable why I started in those places. But as I tried to make a difference in how people were thinking and treating these children, I realized, well, I have to work with whole environments because you can't go in as a therapist and make enough of a difference if you can't change the mindset and the teachings of the entire group. So that changed my lifestyle in that. So then I went from, you know, just trying to work with the primary patient to working with the whole families. And then I noticed that no matter what they did diet-wise or religion-wise or culture-wise, certain things always worked. So then I thought, well, I have to make sure that's true. So I started working internationally in every culture with every kind of eating style, et cetera. So then that shaped my life again because, you know, I'm leaving home a lot. You know, the kids are grown at this point and on their own for the most part. But still, I'm gone. I'm traveling a lot. And so it shaped my life that way. And then I realized, man, I just can't make enough change happen if I'm only talking to the people who are struggling. I have to talk to the people who lead the people who are struggling. So then I sort of pushed myself into and nudged my way into leadership and wrote some books about the brain and leadership. And, you know, that was huge. It was a huge shift for me. And my shifting into that arena has changed my life and my business a lot. I guess each of these changes changed my life and my business a lot. But that's where I'm at today, trying to work. I've pulled back from working hands-on with the primary patients. And I'm more about speaking and writing and trying to disseminate enough information to make a change even after I die. And to make sure there's enough leaders in the world listening to me, I have to be a leader too.
That's great.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the story.
There you go. So what do you think you've identified as a couple of your skill sets or superpowers that have really helped you in your journey?
That's a great question, Belinda. You know, I would say what comes to mind right now, I probably have many superpowers, but what comes to mind right now is that it's too easy to be blinded by a diagnosis. And I've never really suffered from that. I've never, even when I adopted children that were supposed to be in institutions for life, that had been locked up in closets for years, that had been, you know, I never went looking at them like, wow, you know, this is it for you. I looked at them and thought, what's the next best thing that I can do for them? What's the next best step? How do I I'll give you an example. One of my sons, I wanted him to learn to put his sock on. It's such a simple thing to most people, but he was like four and he would freeze in position. And so imagine the muscle that would happen to you if you had to hold your leg elevated in the position to put your sock on and be frozen there. And I was waiting and waiting and I couldn't take the pain of watching him, you know, and I would leave the room and come back and he's still frozen in position. Well, no part of me thought he can't learn this. And I think that's a superpower because truly most people thought, no, he can't learn this. He's got the IQ of like a 2-month-old. He can't learn it. Leave him alone. And I'm like, well, I'm going to encourage him to learn. And that was all I ever thought, just encourage them to learn. Now, all of my children are successful in their own right. That boy is still living with me. He's the only one, and he'll be 39 on his next birthday. All the rest, you know, are independent, married, have kids, careers, all that stuff, all in, you know, different ways and quirky in their own right. But he's successful because not only can he put his socks on, he can put his underwear on from a standing position. And he can, you know, like you have to put it in perspective. Yes, plasticity means improvement or the opposite as well. But I never, even today, I don't look at him and think, well, that's it. That's as far as you can go. I just add a new skill set each time he accomplishes something. So I think that's a superpower. If we could do that for everyone, always be looking for positive movement and change, we wouldn't have shootings. We wouldn't have, you know, we wouldn't have this stuff that we have. And even in this period we're in right now, I you may want this evergreen, so I don't know if you want me to mention that we're in the middle of the lockdown, but it's relevant in that here we are with this COVID-19 thing happening and everybody's in their homes and you have a choice. You can make this something that you see as beautiful and not believe in the diagnosis of cabin fever and depression and, you know, believe in the, hey, this is a bonding time and an opportunity to get all those online skill sets I always wanted to get. You know, it's up to you. And I think it's a superpower to be an optimist that follows optimism with action.
I agree. And I don't, a lot of people don't give me that as their superpower, but I love it because I think it's huge. And I, you know, and I'm not, it's not that I'm not empathetic because I certainly am an empathetic person, but I see people like going through that right now. And I've just decided from the very beginning, okay, this is what we're doing. Now I've worked it from home for a long time, so I'm used to that. But my daughter is home and she's having to do her schoolwork. She's 15, so she's not four. So I understand that. Like that's different when you've got a 6 and an 8 and a 10-year-old and you're trying to do homeschooling plus your boss may still be asking you to work. So that's part I'm 100% empathetic with. But people on day one and day two were like, oh, I'm so depressed and we're stuck here. And it was only on day two. And I understand everybody's got different levels of things, but I just thought, okay, what can we turn this into? Let's make this, you know, what kind of adventure can we turn this into? What kinds of fun things can we do within the house? And I'd say that some things have gone back to a pretty good routine or a new routine that we have fallen into. But at the beginning, we were just, you know, really having so much fun. And we really have come back to eating together every day. And we really weren't doing that. We're all real busy. And we're going 50 million different directions and using that as an excuse. But guess what? We are finding the time to do it now. And it's something I'm going to try to, that's one habit I'm going to try to continue in as much as we can. But I just have been very like, okay, so we're stuck in this situation. How can we make the most out of it? Versus I've seen people nearly like falling apart, crying on, and not on day 5 or 7 or 10 or 12 or 30, but on day 1. So right. It's amazing to me.
But it makes sense, doesn't it? If you, it's back to what I was saying about buying into the diagnosis. We could call it buying into the panic and the things that are said to you about this, the hopelessness that's spread. I mean, emotions are contagious. And so if you take on a belief like, oh my God, we're stuck in the house, well, there's a huge amount of stress that is generated by the concept of losing control. That's that's a human thing. We definitely experience stress if we feel like we've lost control. So when you even use the word stuck in the house, you create stress. If you use the words, oh, phew, we get to stay in the house, right?
Right.
And if you look, yeah, right. So it's a lot of it's our languaging and the stuff that we pay attention to in the media, et cetera. It sort of defines how we talk to ourselves. It's really, it's an important time right now to be able to reset yourself, to go, wait a minute, what do I want to let into my brain? This is a great opportunity for all of us to clean out the pipes and make sure that the way that we're becoming better and the way that we're growing is designed by us, not the media. So don't let the languaging infect you with, you know, okay, so COVID could infect me, but I don't want to let the languaging infect me so that my brain now is in a state of constant stress and I can't enjoy what is happening for me. The truth is, it's a great opportunity. People try really hard to have vacations with their family. Well, you're having it. So go for it.
Yeah.
Do all the vacation things on the inside. It's a staycation.
Yep, absolutely. All right. So what is one of your most outstanding accomplishments or something that you're really proud of?
Gosh, again, another big question. You know, I guess I'm proud of every time I release a book, I'm proud of it. I'm proud of my children. I think I'm a part of their accomplishments, though they get the credit. The fact that I found a way to become a doctor because that wasn't pleasant. Right. So there's lots of things. I like the awards I've received, but I have to say, really, it's Fix It in Five. So Fix It in Five is a docuseries. In fact, I've just released it, season one, and I'm going to release season two onto YouTube. I've had it only on the Autism Channel up until now, but I wanted to give people something to binge that was good for their brains while they were at home. And I wanted to support the people stuck at home with autism with this information. So I created this show where, and it's, you know, it's my give back to society because it costs a lot to have me come out and help your family. So my give back is I go and I see some family in some culture and I bring cameras and we videotape and I put together this show that's a docuseries about that particular family. I plan on doing five. I've only done three so far because it takes me forever to edit. But it's beautiful work and it really says in front of your experience watching it, you get to see, yes, there are techniques that make a difference regardless of diagnosis, culture, religion, location, money. And that's important to me that I leave something because when you write a book, people can roll their eyes as they read a sentence easier than when they see it happen in front of them. So I put my money where my mouth is and I took the cameras with me. And I did have some sponsors that bless them, helped me do that. But it's been a big give back and I'm very, very proud of the product. And they can see it on YouTube if they want to see it there or on the Autism Channel. Or if they want to help me raise money, they can rent it on Vimeo.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So what was one of your greatest challenges and then how did you work through that?
I would say that the challenge for me is and always will be and always has been dealing with the system the way it is and not getting lost, becoming political and fighting the system, rather the system of education especially, rather than doing the work of the hands-on helping. So I'm always tempted to try to fight, you know, point out out the incongruencies, like how everyone's, you know, having a fit about homeschooling. Meanwhile, you know, you ought to think twice about schooling your kids in a normal school anyway in America, because there's so many shootings and there's so much bullying and there's some, you know, most of what you say is good for your children isn't. We don't look at things properly. We buy the line that's fed to us and we just keep marching along that path. And that's a temptation for me all the time, to get in there and be shouting loud and, you know, pointing these things out constantly, but then no one wants to hear you and you don't make the difference person to person, child to child, family to family. So that's my biggest challenge. Even when I was inside it and going to school, I spent a lot of time knowing the brain better than the teachers did, because I'd hands-on helped for a long time and I use neurofeedback. So I'm looking at EEGs, electroencephalograms all the time, and I'm constantly seeing what actually works, not what they say works according to the study that was kind of skewed in favor of the person doing the study. And I spent a lot of time going, okay, just pass the exam and then forget this because you know it's wrong. Like, that's a very challenging position, knowing when to speak out and when not to.
Right. Absolutely. So what does working from your happy place mean to you?
Well, I think it means exactly what we just talked about. Well, first of all, it means following my creativity. So, okay. For example, when I was raising my kids, we toured in prisons, and that was a very creative thought, right? I was like, wait a minute, I have all these kids, but I'm also doing stand-up comedy, but I'm also trying to help them educate, and the school's messing them up. What could we do? Ah, well, we'll do a prison tour. Now, nobody comes up with that but me. So it's looking at a problem without so much emotional negativity that you can literally come up with something that solves it for. This was one of my best decisions, and yet it's such a crazy sounding thing, but we put together a show, we rehearsed it, I wrote it, the kids were a part of it, the ones that could be, and the ones that couldn't were a part of the tour. I took them along anyway, and you know, it was an amazing experience. They learned geography on the road. They, you know, it was just fantastic. And then my teenagers were going through that phase where they were looking at going to jail as a great relief from life. And it was really kind of a sexy, cool thought to them, because, you know, the TV shows and the movies kind of made it sound like a, you know, then you're a tough, cool chick. And I'm like, oh no, jail is not cool. Right. So right. I created this thing that woke everyone up and changed their functioning level. And we literally had to solve problems daily to make it happen. And we did it as a group. And so for me, working from my happy place is trusting my instincts, trusting myself in a big way, being willing to say, oh, I made a mistake and do a U-turn when I am wrong, so I can fully trust myself and go full in, and being creative. I just love adding the creative touch.
Perfect. It is an important piece of it, isn't it?
Oh yeah, for sure. The minute I'm super happy, I'm creative. I mean, it's just a part of it. And I don't know if that's my personality or if that's maybe a blessing everyone gets out of happiness. I think that I may be more creative than some, but that we're all more creative when we're happy.
I would agree with that.
I'm more happy when we're creative. Kind of goes together.
It kind of does. It goes back to that sort of office work situation where like 90% of the time is spent on tasks and things you have to do, and the workforce, because they're so busy, are running behind, you know, being reactive instead of proactive, that they spend less than 10% on any creativity and moving the business forward. And that becomes very stagnant, not a fun place to work. People don't enjoy their job as much. So that has been totally proven within the corporate world as well.
Yeah. And it's so funny because it's such a simple thing that we all know. And if we're watching a movie, we see somebody do something, we go, well, of course, right? But the minute we live in our lives, we forget what we know. So here, to you know, to what you said, let's say you're in the corporate world, let's say you're an office floor of 15 accountants, and they put a bell at the front, right? And as soon as you finish your sheet, you run up and ring the bell. And then if you ring the bell five times in one day, you get to have a half day off, right? The productivity would go up, the laughing would go up, the fun would go up, the competition, yeah, that would go up. But as long as it's done with the right attitude, all you'd get is better, effective people. And do we do that? Yeah, the odd place does. And they always see positive benefits, and they create studies and they put out paperwork that proves this is true. But still, people go, yeah, I don't want to do that. It's, you know, work is supposed to look like work.
I know.
Isn't it silly?
It is silly. It is totally silly. I remember
silly to take out the silly. You got to leave it in there.
I know we used to have, and I don't do it anymore. And it used to be so much fun when we were really growing our business. But every time that we would get a speaking engagement, I used to say, okay, everybody, you know, we just got hired for whatever. And I would make everybody get, I'd put music on super loud and make everybody get up from their seat and do a happy dance. And there were people that just like looked at me like my one bookkeeper. She's like, I'm not doing that. And I was like, come on, just let yourself go, like have some fun at work and celebrate, like every time we get these are little wins, you got to celebrate our wins. And but it's also amazing at how people hold so much in, they can't even let themselves do that,
right? And that we do that to children too. We teach them to do that again with the organized schooling, right? You spend so much time learning to be still at your desk and everything, but when your children were learning their most, when they were in their youngest years, they did a happy dance without you telling them to.
They were
like jumping. I know, because I have great grandkids in the house, and they are all over the place, right? And they are quick to celebrate and go, yeah, I did that. And they are learning so much. You'll never learn that much ever again. Your brain is never going to be moving at that pace again. Why would you diminish the pace on purpose? Why would you stop children from celebrating and being lively? Because it's more convenient for the teachers, etc. However, your homeschooling experience, this period of time with everyone at home, you can actually get your kids ahead by a year, literally in a month. I had special needs kids, and I moved them from their special needs allocation to normal in a year.
Wow.
And this is why it's so frustrating, because I not only say it, I've done it and done it and done it. It's everything that we're being told to do is, that's a very big word, everything. I shouldn't use that word. A large part of what is driving us is what we think is right. And what we think is right is just sort of status quo. It's like, I should send my child to school because that's what you do. And if children go to school, they'll be, you know, better off. They'll learn socially and all of that. You can learn social skills happen in fun things, not in sitting in a desk. Good social skills happen from cooperative team playing, and you can sign them up for all kinds of stuff that's going to give them social skills. So why are they going to school? Every study you ever will read has school as the lesser of the two between homeschooling and going to your regular school, the lesser of the two for grades. You get way better grades, you get way better, in way less time, way better movement by the student brain if you homeschool. It takes a few hours a day to homeschool. It takes six a day to go to school. Why? Because you're learning to sit in a desk, line up, go from one classroom to another. The stuff you're learning isn't very relevant to your life later.
Yeah, it certainly is a new way of looking at it, isn't it?
Well, it's just a reality. I mean, it's the truth. You can look at the studies. They all support it. I get wanting to use schools because they already exist and the teachers are trained. I'm not saying nobody should use the school system, but you should do it with your eyes open.
Yep.
So that when your child's having trouble, you're comfortable going, okay, maybe we'll take you home for a while. And maybe we'll find a new school. case in point, I have this boy that I've been working with for a long time, and I've been saying his problem is that school. And I've told his parents for a year and a half. Finally, because he tried to kill himself and ended up in a, you know, then the police took him. He went to, you know, he was in-housed for about a month. They homeschooled him there in a different way. I got him to the school I wanted him in, and he's been happy ever since. Right? Like, why did it have to take that?
Wow. So what advice, as we're closing out our time together, would you give to others wanting to follow their heart or be an entrepreneur or do something that is meaningful for them?
Well, I think first thing I would say is figure out what that is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't even know what's meaningful for them. It's not that they're holding themselves back from what they really want to do. They don't know what that is. And I know I've been sort of railing against listening too much to media and, you know, the party line and all of that. But there's a reason for that. It's because it fills your head with other people's ideas and you don't know your own. So first step is find out what that is. Like, what do you, if you're sitting there going, well, I don't know what I want to do, then what do you do? What do you naturally do when you have time off and you've recuperated? Not when you first come in and you're exhausted and you turn on the television or go to bed or whatever it is, or eat. But when you've recuperated, what do you find yourself doing? Do you find yourself doing something creative? Do you find yourself like me? You leave me too long, I'm going to go pick up some homeless person and try to help them. Like, I'm naturally someone who wants to adopt. My kids are always saying, don't bring that one home. So, so I know who I am. But it took a while for me to know that. So that's your first thing. You have to know who you are and what it is you want to be. If you don't like who you are, then you have some changes to make. And those things have to happen before you even think entrepreneurship. There's a lot of people that step into being an entrepreneur and they go, you know, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, and they think that's their expertise, but you need an expertise first. You need to know who you are, what you are, what you want to bring to the world first. Otherwise, you're just another person trying to sell stuff that you don't really care about.
Right.
You know, we got plenty of those. So find that and embrace it, and then look for how that can somehow pay your bills.
Absolutely.
You know, and from there, you can just ask yourself some important questions. You could get my book. It'll help you.
And what's the name of your book?
Well, I have a few for leadership. One is The 7 Senses of Leadership. But the one that I'm thinking of really is called Inspire Yourself to Greatness. It's got a subtitle too, but Change Your Brain, Change the World. I think that one for someone who's seeking to know themselves and know what they want to bring to the world and really feel value and move forward into entrepreneurship. I think that's a great book. It really holds your hand and we kind of write it together. I leave spots for you to answer questions in and stuff. And so I would get the physical book, but you can, you know, do it digitally and have a notepad beside you too.
Perfect. Well, this has been absolutely delightful. You've really given some fantastic insights and nuggets for people to take away. And just really, you've shared your passion with us so well. So I appreciate that so much. But how can people find you?
It's pretty easy. First of all, I am called the Brain Broad because I travel abroad working on a broad number of disorders. But and I work with the brain and the plasticity of the brain. So if you put the Brain Broad in any search engine, you're going to find my website, you're going to find my Facebook, you're going to find my Twitter, you're going to find all that stuff. But just to let you know, it's LynetteLouise.com or brainbody.net. And then, you know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, and that's it. I don't do the other ones.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much today, Lynette, for being our guest and sharing with everyone on Work From Your Happy Place. And I would just like to remind everyone listening today to subscribe to Work From Your Happy Place so that you don't miss a single episode. So once again, thank you so much.
You're more than welcome, Belinda. Thank you for having me. All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.